bunch of fakes. Don't try to dig what we all say.
This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. A couple of years ago, the comedian Albert Brooks wrote a book called 2030, The Real Story of What Happens to America. It's a novel in which, essentially, young people get fed up with old people getting everything. Social Security, Medicare, etc. As the baby boomers aged, the millennials looked at them and were jealous that so much was going to them. Paul Taylor says, you know what? That's not fiction. In his new book, The Next America, Boomers, Millennials, and the Looming Generational Showdown. Paul is the Executive Vice President of Special Projects at the Pew Research Center and joins me now here to talk about it. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for having me.
So Albert Brooks was kind of prescient here.
I think he's both right and wrong. I think he is right that if you look at economic well-being today between young and old, and you can compare today's young and old with yesterday's young and old on all the measures we look at, employment, unemployment, debt, wealth, poverty, today's young are doing worse than yesterday's young, and today's old are doing better than yesterday's old. Those gaps have gotten much wider. Where I'm not sure he's prescient is I don't see a generation war in the making, despite those growing gaps, because we do a lot of attitudinal surveys at the Pew Research Center, and you know what? Young and old like each other, and they get along really well. They get they're living together more so than any time in modern history. Some of this is economic necessity. The young can't find jobs. They hang out with mom and dad later in life than certainly somebody my age was accustomed to. I'm a boomer. But they respect each other, that's sort of the happy part of the story. But yes, there are economic tensions between the generations, no doubt.
My daughter is a millennial. Should she be worried?
I think she should. I think that we, you know, the millennials, we define millennials as people born after 1980. So the oldest of them is now no longer a kid. We've been following them for the last decade, and I've been thinking of them as sort of teenagers and young adults. Well, guess what? The oldest of them is now in his or her early 30s, far enough along to start to take some interesting measures of how well they're doing. What we can say today is they are the first generation in modern history to be worse off at this stage of their life cycle than were their parents' generation or their grandparents' generation. So that is a worrisome fact. It doesn't mean that this is going to continue throughout the whole life course, but they're off to a troubling start because they've been dealt a very, very difficult economy.
And that, by the way, also puts pressure on us, the boomers, their parents, because we've got to keep our eye on them much longer, don't we?
Right, and there's a word for that, the sandwich generation, and the boomers are in the sandwich portion of our lives, where many of us have, some of us still have young kids, many of us now have grown kids, many of us have, and this is a very happy part of the story, many of us have parents who are still living. There's a phrase, it's not just the sandwich generation, it's the club sandwich generation. You know, there are some families that have four generations. Again, there's nothing but good news there, but financial pressures, you bet. The boomers are on the threshold of retirement. 10,000 a day will turn 65 every single day between now and Albert Brooks' 2030. By the time that pig in a python generation is over into retirement and all becoming not taxpayers but beneficiaries of Social Security and Medicare, the math of those programs don't work, so we have to rebalance them. But the boomers on the threshold of retirement, some of them are in good shape, not all of them. 40-50% are not well fortified financially for the journey into retirement, so they have their own worries. Then they worry about their 80 or 90 year old parents and their 20 or 30 year old kids who are having trouble getting started, and in some cases, you know, their young grandchildren, and who's going to pay for the college education for them. So there are a lot of financial stresses on all generations, and this reflects, frankly, you know, an American public over the last 15 years. Median household income in this country peaked in 1999 and has not yet returned to that peak. So that's 15 straight years. That's the longest stretch we've ever measured, and everybody's feeling the pinch.
I'm curious about the impact of this millennial generation, 18 to 34-year-olds, on politics. Are they more liberal?
They are absolutely more liberal. We can see that in their voting behaviors. They've now been in the electorate for two or three presidential cycles. They were a very big part of both of President Obama's victories. The young-old voting gap is the largest in the 40 years that we've measured these things. Younger, more liberal, older, more conservative. You only have to go back to the year 2000 when there was absolutely no difference between how 65 and overs voted and how 35 and unders voted. In the last two presidential cycles, there was about a 16, 18, 20 percentage point difference in that. So they are liberal on their social attitudes, sort of the hot button issues of the day, gay marriage, legalization of marijuana. All groups are becoming more receptive to those ideas. The millennials are leading the way. They are more liberal in their notion that government can be a force for good, and they want more government. In that sense, they're different from their elders. But there's another interesting fact about millennials is that they are not inclined to identify with either political party. And our latest poll, we ask, are you a liberal, are you a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent? 50% of millennials, far more than any other generation, say, I'm independent. They don't seem to want to attach themselves to organized institutions, whether they're political, religious. They're also the most religiously disaffiliated. They're not getting married, largely because of their economic circumstances. They just feel they don't have the economic foundation to get married. But they're liberal, and they do organize their world not through traditional anchors like that, but through the other amazing part of their lives, which is they are digital natives. They're the first generation in human history that takes all these amazing digital technologies for granted. It's the only world they've ever known. So they create social networks, and those are the connections that they have more so than traditional organizations.
Leaving aside the digital stuff, just looking at the social attitudes and the politics and the rest of it, how does that compare to us or even Gen X, which came after us, when we were that age? Weren't we the same?
The boomers came in famously, in the 60s as a liberal generation. They're remembered for the counterculture, the civil rights, anti-war, women's rights. But that's what they're best remembered for, but it is interesting to note that the first year that the boomers voted in a presidential election was 1972. That was also the first year that we lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. More baby boomers in that election voted for Richard Nixon than voted for his anti-war Democratic challenger, George McGovern. Now, they were a little bit more Democratic than the older folks were, but they were never quite as liberal as their reputation would have it, in part because there were some boomers who were part of the silent majority who weren't protesting the dean's office over the Vietnam War. They were fighting the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
If you fast forward that generation 30 or 40 years later, we just took a survey the other day and we asked people of all ages and over the course of your lives, have you gotten more liberal or more conservative? Actually, a majority of boomers say I've gotten actually more conservative over my lifespan.
Right.
The next generation down are the Xers. They came in as a somewhat more conservative voting group. So when they were young, they tended conservative. This generation of millennials is coming in as a liberal group, very liberal. And there are a lot of differences of opinions among theorists here. Does your voting behavior in your 20s indicate you're baked in for the full life cycle? And I would sort of split the difference on that, saying, well, yeah, it's important, and that's when a lot of your world views are formed. But just judging from the behaviors of the boomers over the course of the last 30, 40 years, situations change, circumstances change, and people change.
Now, let me go back to digital technology. We jumped off it for a moment there, but let's go back to it because it is a huge part of my daughter's generation. But it's also a big part of a lot of people's attention most days. I read recently that the largest majority of people who have joined Facebook in the last 24 months are senior citizens who are becoming more tech savvy. That may be because their grandchildren are teaching them how to use technology. But what's the difference between somebody who's, say, 20 and somebody who's 60 or 70 when it comes to the digital world?
Well, it's the 20-year-olds and maybe even it's the 12 and 14 and 15-year-olds who are leading the way. They're the early adopters. They're the ones who just understand how to use this and build very, very extensive networks around this. So to reduce it to numbers, the typical millennial of 80-plus percent are on Facebook, and the typical millennial on Facebook has 250 friends. The typical older person, yes, fewer are on Facebook, but it is, you're absolutely right. It's growing, and there's a kind of a catch-up there. But even the older person on Facebook has maybe 40 or 50 friends. And that number is an indication of just how deeply embedded social networking behaviors is in the lives of millennials. More so than, you know, we asked a question in a survey last month about selfies. Selfies had a big moment with the Oscars the other day. But selfies is symbolically, there's something about a selfie. There's something empowering about a selfie. People have been taking self-portraits throughout human history, but now suddenly in the last 5 or 10 years, you can take a self-portrait, you can post it to your network of friends, and if it's an interesting self-portrait, it may go viral, and you know, 100 people might look at it, or 100 million people might look at it, and there's something kind of empowering and amazing about that, that young adults have embraced and older adults are a little confused by. So we asked people, have you ever taken it? Do you know what a selfie is? And this was just a month ago. This was before Ellen DeGeneres' big selfie moment at Oscar night. But actually, selfies had already achieved enough cachet when we asked this question that Oxford Dictionary made the selfie the word of the year in 2013.
Right.
So we asked all people of all ages, do you know what a selfie is? And only about a third of older folks said, yeah. You know, it was two-thirds don't know what a selfie is, and only 5% have taken one. So
yeah.
That's an example of, you know, for the younger folks, this is the essential mediator of information acquisition, of social interaction. This is where they live, that little thing they hold in their hands. For people my age, you know, when I think about what you can do with two or three clicks, you can get access to the whole sum of human knowledge. It just blows my mind. My jaw's dropped every time I do it, and I'm slow to adapt to it. But my kids and grandkids know exactly what to do with it.
Absolutely. And by the way, the other part of the selfie equation is the person who then sees your selfie takes a selfie of themselves, which they post back to you on Snapchat with a caption as the message, and that becomes the new social medium for them. One last question I have for you, Paul. Is this just an American thing? I don't mean the digital technology. I know that that's global. But I mean the liberal attitudes of the millennial generation and the worry about their economic future. Is that just American, or is that worldwide?
Very much global, and very much there's a good news story here. The age skew, the fact that our society is getting older and we're going to have to rebalance the social safety net because it wasn't built for this, that is happening. Europe is 10 years ahead of us on that. Japan and other East Asian countries are way ahead of us on that, and ahead means having to confront these very serious problems. In terms of the use of social media, boy, we see it all over the world. You see it in Egypt. You see, when there's the youth revolution there, it is an extraordinary force. I have a feeling 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, when historians write about our era, they will be writing about the digital revolution. That is a big thing that has happened to humankind, and everybody is adapting to it. And today's young adults are the pioneers, because they're the first that this is just the wallpaper of their lives.
Paul Taylor is Executive Vice President of Special Projects at the Pew Research Center, where he oversees demographic and social and generational research. His book is called The Next America, Boomers, Millennials, and the Looming Generational Showdown. Paul, thanks so much for joining me today.
It's great to be with you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.